Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. So today, the subject is presidential libraries, because this month we're celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library. But wait, here's a question for you. Who was the first president to have a presidential library by leaving his papers to the federal government? The answer is FDR, who not only left his papers, but ultimately his Hyde Park residence. So that's why we hear about George Washington's or Thomas Jefferson's or Lincoln's papers in private collections, because earlier, when a president left office, he just packed up the work product and went home. So after FDR left his to the government, President Truman followed suit, leaving his papers to the government, at which point Congress passed the Presidential Libraries Act, providing federal funding for the preservation of the work product of the White House. With that in mind, what would one find at a presidential library? Here's how President Reagan described his expectations at the library's groundbreaking ceremonies.
And what this library will house is the record of the ideas and policies that undergirded our accomplishments. These have indeed been years of intellectual ferment. They have featured discussions on the most important matters facing our nation. What kind of government should we have? How much government is too much government? How best to expand the frontiers of freedom around the world? How best to pay our national bills? How best to help those who seem to have lost hope, and how to spread our bounties across the globe, how to achieve our national destiny.
Just 3 years after that 1988 groundbreaking ceremony, history was made in Simi Valley as five presidents gathered to celebrate the dedication of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library on November 4th, 1991. It was 11 years to the day since the man of the hour was elected president. With six first ladies joining them, the library and museum were officially opened. Behind the scenes, more than 40 truckloads of presidential papers and 20 truckloads of gifts and memorabilia brought the hard assets to confirm the story of 8 years that changed the world.
Yes, there'll be much to study here, much to discuss, and much to mull over. This library will allow scholars of the future to cast their own judgment on these years, and I would not presume to predict the result of their researches. But I have to believe that scholars of goodwill, upon examining the historical record that will be contained herein, will judge our efforts well. But as for us, at present, we can only say this. We have done our best, and we pray it has been enough.
Going back, the Reagan Library story did not begin in Simi Valley. It began on the Stanford University campus with the Hoover Institution. Well, because California was the first choice for the Reagan Library due to the president's association with California, he was governor for 8 years. On a different note, having a presidential library affiliated with a university provided a great learning opportunity. The first presidential library associated with a university was LBJ's library at the University of Texas, thus creating a school of public policy, ultimately making a presidential library a living institution. But after much discussion, the faculty at Stanford voted no to the idea of having Reagan's library on campus. A developer in Simi Valley and a Stanford graduate himself heard about the controversy and offered a 100-acre parcel to the library as a valuable opportunity for ourselves and the community. So, in August 1987, after the president and first lady held an inspection tour, the library planners moved forward. Within weeks, trustees of the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation voted to build the $60 million library there. By November 1987, the presidential materials had secured a future home surrounded by mountains with a spectacular view of the Pacific Ocean. At the groundbreaking ceremony, President Reagan said,
"What we know best is this. We owe all we have to our forebears who built our land and our government and gave it to us as a sacred bequest. And today, in this stunning setting, we begin to pay our debt to them and to our own posterity by breaking ground for this library that will bear my name and house the collected ruminations and reflections of the presidency that has borne my name as well.
More about the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library's 30th anniversary after this.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself, and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, back to the story of the Reagan Library. Once the facility was constructed, 55 million documents were delivered, ranging from menus of official state dinners to the first draft of his March 11, 1983 Evil Empire speech and his March 23, 1983 speech inaugurating the Strategic Defense Initiative. In addition to documents, all the film, videos, photographs, and all the gifts to the Reagans from foreign governments are cataloged and displayed, along with hundreds of canes sent to the president from well-wishers when he was recuperating from the 1981 assassination attempt. When the Reagan Library opened, it was the largest of the presidential libraries at approximately 153,000 square feet, and it held that title until the dedication of the William J. Clinton Presidential Center in Little Rock, Arkansas on November 18, 2004. With the opening of the 90,000-square-foot Air Force One Pavilion in October 2005, the Reagan Library reclaimed the title in terms of physical size. Like all presidential libraries since that of FDR, the Reagan Library was built entirely with private donations. 30 years ago, on a bright, sunny November day, five U.S. presidents joined the festivities. President H.W. Bush, at the time, and former Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Carter stood by President Reagan. Some say it was an apt setting for a tribute to the actor-turned-40th president, because the library and mission-style complex looked out on a vista that was once a backdrop for Hollywood westerns. Although the 40th president never donned chaps here, but Gene Autry, the Lone Ranger, and dozens of other celluloid cowboys did. It was called a convergence of modern American ideologies and politics as they gathered on the same platform for the first time in history. And if there was any lingering animosity from the 22 momentous years in which they presided over the Republic, little of it was evident. At the time, only once before had there been more living presidents. In 1861, Presidents Lincoln, Van Buren, Tyler, Fillmore, Pierce, and Buchanan were all alive. At the Reagan Library opening ceremonies, six First Ladies also participated: Barbara Bush, Nancy Reagan, Rosalind Carter, Betty Ford, Pat Nixon, and even Lady Bird Johnson, who was accompanied by her daughters. Here's how our 40th president welcomed his distinguished guests. Let's listen.
I am proud and honored that so many of the great presidential families are represented here today. The descendants of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, for whom I cast my first 4 votes, and who has served as a personal inspiration to me, as well as millions of Americans. Carolyn and John Kennedy, Jr. Ooh. Who, through their strength and courage, have so proudly carried forward the flame of their father's legacy. Lady Bird Johnson, whose warmth and strength served as a tremendous source of inspiration to her husband, and whose personal efforts have inspired a whole new generation of Americans to keep America beautiful. She's joined by her daughter, Lucy Johnson Turpin, and Lucy's husband, Eon Turpin. The five presidents on this platform span 22 years of challenge and triumph, from the first man on the moon to the last aggressor out of liberated Kuwait. Two and a half decades forever stamped with the style and substance of a grocer's son from Yorba Linda, California, who as a boy heard train whistles in the night and dreamed of traveling to distant places, and who as president would crisscross the globe to build a new and lasting structure of peace, and his lovely wife, Pat, whose splendor and grace has served as an inspiration to every first lady that has followed her. And, an all-American from Michigan by way of Capitol Hill, who has an embodiment of Midwestern decency and honor, steered the ship of state through rough waters and won the affection of Americans everywhere. And his first lady, Betty, who has been a shining example of personal strength to millions of Americans. A son of the South whose election did more than anything else to restore that great region to its rightful place in the American mainstream, and who devoted himself tirelessly to cleaning the blood of Abraham from the sands of the Middle East, and his partner to the president, Rosalynn, who assists him to this day in his important efforts to improve the quality of life in nations around the world. And a Texan imbued with the can-do optimism of that larger-than-life place, who in liberating a small nation half a world away has also freed the United States of America from the crippling legacy of Vietnam, and with us today, America's First Lady, Barbara, whose personal campaign for literacy has opened the minds and hearts of so many Americans. And of course, my Nancy. I don't know how to begin to describe what she means to me, except to say I can't imagine life without her.
Then the president expressed his hopes for this institution. Let's listen.
Together we gather for a single purpose, to give to the American people and the world a presidential library. There is understandably a great temptation to look back, to remember, to share warm and fond memories, and to reflect on the events which brought us here. And as we do, I hope we do not unduly focus on one man, one political party, or even one country. Instead, our focus should be on the enduring fundamental principles of life that ennoble mankind. Ever since Franklin Delano Roosevelt, presidents have built libraries, and amidst the surroundings that have shaped their characters and molded their values. From West Branch, Iowa, to the Simi Valley of California, these institutions reflect the genius of the American people for self-government. Within their walls are housed millions of records for scholarly interpretation, along with thousands of objects that give both solid and symbolic substance to this nation's highest office, and to the 40 men who have occupied it since Washington took his oath. Like the office they commemorate, presidential libraries are living institutions. Certainly it is my hope that the Reagan Library will become a dynamic intellectual forum where scholars interpret the past and policymakers debate the future. It is said that after leaving the White House, Harry Truman once came into his living room to discover his wife, Bess, tossing their old love letters into the fireplace. "Think of history," said a horrified Mr. Truman. "I have," said Bess. Well, in a few days, more than 6 million pages of documentation pertaining to my administration will be released to the public. In time, more than 50 million pages will be made available for researchers. But if the Reagan Library is anything like its counterparts, most of those who enter these doors will not be academics. No, they will be ordinary people of all ages, backgrounds, and political persuasions, eager to examine their past and explore a history not always learned in school. For them, this institution will be a time capsule of American growth and greatness, covering more than a single presidency, honoring more than a single president. Here, visitors will have a chance to tour and study at their leisure the accelerating changes in a fast-forward world. They will be able to trace the historic process by which mankind has stepped back from the narrow window ledge of mutually assured destruction.
Such a beautiful speech, isn't it? At one point, the president looked back. So let's listen.
I grew up in a town where everyone cared about one another, because everyone knew one another, not as statistics in a government program, but as neighbors in need. Is that nostalgic? I don't think so. I think it is still what sets this nation apart from every other nation on the face of the earth. Our neighbors were never ashamed to kneel in prayer to their Maker, nor were they ever embarrassed to feel a lump in their throat when Old Glory passed by. No one in Dixon, Illinois, ever burned a flag, and no one in Dixon would have tolerated it. Something else I learned, and that every generation of young Americans must discover for themselves, I learned to admire the entrepreneurial spirit of this pioneering land, where everyone has a chance to push out the boundaries of life. All this and more will greet visitors to this library and museum. If they're anything like me, they will arrive with a conviction so reminiscent of what Nellie Reagan taught long ago in Dixon, that America itself is no accident of geography or political science, but part of God's plan to preserve and extend the sacred fire of human liberty. I, too, have been described as an undying optimist, always seeing a glass half full when some see it as half empty. And yes, it's true. I always see the sunny side of life. And that's not just because I've been blessed by achieving so many of my dreams. My optimism comes not just from my strong faith in God, but from my strong and enduring faith in man. In my 80 years, I prefer to call that the 41st anniversary of my 39th birthday, I've seen what men can do for each other and do to each other. I've seen war and peace, feast and famine, depression and prosperity, sickness and health. I've seen the depths of suffering and the peaks of triumph. And I know in my heart that man is good, that what is right will always eventually triumph, and that there is purpose and worth to each and every life. A dynamic people, by rolling their sleeves up and getting government off their backs, can achieve economic renewal. They can slay the beast of inflation and break the record book when it comes to sustained economic growth. They can create millions of new jobs and show a watching world the success of free enterprise. I remember a time when the growth of American government seemed inexorable, and the encroachment of that government on the lives and liberties of our citizens seemed unstoppable. I also remember a time when America was advised to keep a low profile in the world, as if by hunkering down and muzzling her deepest beliefs, she might avoid foreign criticism and placate her enemies. And I remember a time when walls divided nations and human rights were trampled in the name of corrupt ideologies, a time when the arms race was spiraling out of control and distrust stood between us. 80 years is a long time to live. And yet, within the course of only a few short years, I have seen the world turned upside down and conventional wisdom utterly disproved. Visitors to this mountaintop will see a great jagged chunk of that Berlin Wall, as you've been told already, hated symbol of, yes, an evil empire that spied on and lied to its citizens, denying them their freedom, their bread, even their faith. Well, today, that wall exists only in museums, souvenir collections, and the memories of a people no longer oppressed. It is also a reminder that a strong America is always desirable and necessary in our world. Today, a heroic people has cast off the chains of Marx and Lenin that gave rise to so much of this century's tensions. The Iron Curtain has rusted away. In churches and schools, in factories and on farms, the people of Eastern Europe have found their voice, and with it a battering ram to knock down the walls of tyranny. Totalitarianism is melting like snow. As the mythology of communism melts under the fierce heat of truth, our greatest enemy now may be complacency itself. Meanwhile, let us joyously invade our former opponents with Yankee ingenuity, entrepreneurs selling their wares, enthusiastic tourists, all spreading the gospel of human freedom. Prosperous democracies don't declare war on each other. They simply let their citizens build better lives for themselves. Western Europe soared like a phoenix from the ashes of World War II. So can Eastern Europe from the ruins of totalitarianism. And the American people can help show the way. What a happy challenge for those looking for something to do after the Cold War. Today is the latest chapter in a story that began a quarter century ago when the people of California entrusted me with the stewardship of their dreams. The latest, but far from the last, for 10 years after we summoned America to a new beginning, we are beginning still. Every day brings fresh challenges and opportunities to match. With each sunrise, we are reminded that millions of our citizens have yet to share in the abundance of American prosperity. Many languish in neighborhoods bereft of hope. Still others hesitate to venture out on the streets for fear of criminal violence. Can't we pledge ourselves to a new beginning for them? Around the world, hope stirs in the Middle East, and our prayers are with the peacemakers as they strive to realize an historic opportunity to bring peace to that ancient cradle of faith. With the Cold War over, can't we achieve a new beginning wherever peace is threatened? Proverbially, old men plant trees, even though they do not expect to see their fruition. Well, so it is with presidents. The doors of this library are open now, and all are welcome. The judgment of history is left to you, the people. I have no fears of that, for we have done our best. And so I say, come and learn from it. My fondest hope is that Americans will travel the road extending forward from the arch of experience, never forgetting our heroic origins, never failing to seek divine guidance as we march boldly, bravely into a future limited only by our capacity to dream.
And now, for 30 years, the Reagan Library has served as a loyal soldier to President Reagan's commitment to individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. The library has been host to world leaders like Margaret Thatcher, Mikhail Gorbachev, and Lech Walesa. It has opened millions of documents, even those necessary to be reviewed for a once-nominated United States Supreme Court Chief Justice by the name of John Roberts. It has honored the legacy of President and Mrs. Reagan as their final resting place. I'd like to leave you today with a heartfelt comment from the President, delivered at the library's groundbreaking ceremonies, as he expressed with tender modesty what this moment meant to him. Let's listen.
This is, of course, a most humbling moment for me. As my time in Washington draws to its close, I've had occasion to reflect on the astonishing journey that I've been privileged to make from the banks of the Rock River and to this glorious site overlooking the mighty Pacific. The journey has not just been my own. It seems I've been guided by a force much larger than myself, a force made up of ideas and beliefs about what this country is and what it could be. The story that'll be told inside the walls that are yet to be built here is the story not only of a presidency, but of a movement, a determined movement dedicated to the greatness of America and faith in its bedrock traditions, in the essential goodness of its people, in the essential soundness of its institutions, and yes, faith in our very essence as a nation.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.